different writers and people that they came around and contacted to write them up and then shut them up.
But only the ones that bought the book are in the book.
Yeah, it is most of
them. They missed a lot of good folks, didn't they?
Yeah, there's a lot that aren't in there.
That's too bad. Yeah.
And they, about a year and a half later, the same guy come around, and they're starting to do it all over again. Only they were going to make it a little more detailed or get shown. And I thought, just leave me out of it. Fold up his books and knew it all. So I don't know if they ever went through with another volume or a later volume or not. But he told me these. You can't buy them anywhere. About all they made up was the ones they sold to people, and a few copies, some of the state libraries or something.
Well, they really are collector's items then, aren't they?
He said it would be, but I don't know.
I can remember I went to a small parochial school in northeastern Colorado, and we had a set of these in our school. I don't know whether they've been donated by someone or whether the school bought them.
Could have been.
But I can't ever remember using them that much for research, but I can remember seeing them because the covers of them are just beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all embossed and done in color.
But I just brought it on account of that history of the county. See, this is all one book, really. But it's authentic, I think, in a way.
The reason I asked is that I have some quite old books that Mrs. Payton or Paxton from here in the library had given me to look through for my research. And I was amazed at the things that even I know aren't right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they were written back when people had people to ask.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't understand why there are so many problems with them.
Well, I don't either, except when this fella came and talked to me, I was out in the field working, see.
Oh.
I just stopped and said, talked to him, and dates and things like that, I can't remember exactly.
Gosh, who can without something in front of you?
But, so I just told him what I knew off the top of my head, you might say. So if you want to take them along and look at them,
I think I could and then bring them back to you in a few days?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, that would be super. Thank you. Well, shall we start in with the concept now? Okay. Tell me where your family came from.
Well, the one that settled here was my mother's father, my grandfather on my mother's side. He come from Chicago originally. His family had a big farm back in what's now covered up by Chicago.
They were on pretty expensive land, weren't they?
Yeah.
I'll bet not at that time, though, huh?
Well, of course, it wasn't at that time. Mm-hmm. It was on the outskirts.
Yeah. What was their name?
Kennicott. K-E-N-N-I-C-O-T-T. And that was Frank Kennicott, was my mother's father. There was a big family of them.
I see. Is this a relation to Kennicott Copper that we hear about these days?
No.
I see. If you're like me, it's always somebody else that has the rich relatives, isn't it? If you're like me, it's always somebody else that has the rich relatives, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Comstock wasn't in relation to Comstock Load either.
Darn.
I see the
strand
here.
I'm writing in kind of shorthand here, but I think I have all of that down. What brought them to the valley?
Well, I just was just looking for a place to settle.
They didn't start out from Chicago saying, we're going to go to the Wet Mountain Valley in Colorado? Or?
Well, my grandfather had a brother that came here a year or so before he did.
Oh, I see.
And he started his to homestead area. Well, they preempted in those days instead of homesteading the place here. And then he, my grandfather and some of his other brothers came out, and my grandfather took over the other brother decided to give up the
preemption.
My grandfather took it over, and that's how he came to settle here. This preemption, I don't know if you know.
I was going to ask you about that.
But it was, instead of, just like a homestead, they bought the land for little or nothing, about $2 an acre or something like that. But then they had to go through a good deal like a homestead and do so much improving and so on before they got full time to it. But this little money they paid for it went to the Indians. See, they kicked the Indians off on a reservation, so where this money's supposed to help take care of the
Indians. Do you think it ever got to the Indians?
Yeah.
Did it really?
Probably more so than nowadays. Government money nowadays, most of it is spent by the ones.
Most of it goes to the office workers before it gets. Either my history was not complete when I was studying it, or I missed part of it because I did not know about the preemption. Before we go on any further. Now we're going again. See, we had just finished talking about preemption, and that was how your family was brought into the valley.
Yeah, of course. Some of the land in the valley was homesteaded, some was preempted. I don't know what reason, but that's what they did there. Was my grandfather did with the first land, he took up a preemption.
And do you know about when this was? Just in
about 1870. And he just started ranching, which was pretty much in the early stages.
There wasn't a whole lot else to do in those days, was there?
And my mother was born 1872 here. She's probably, aside from the German colonies, she's probably the first white child born in the valley here.
I would think she was, yes.
And when she was born, her mother died.
Oh, gracious.
And she's the first grave in the Uley Cemetery.
I see.
When she died, my grandfather kind of went around to neighbors, you know, and William Kettle had just settled there.
Mm-hmm.
He gave the land for that cemetery, and that's how it got started.
For heaven's sake.
Well, my grandfather married again later, had two more daughters. One of them never married the other one. Went to school at Stanford University, married a fellow she met there by the name of Rogers. And I eventually went partners with the Rogers running the ranch there. He wasn't living on it. He was an engineer at that time. He was living in Honolulu. But that's how the Comstock Rogers name goes.
I had always wondered about that, and I'd forgotten for just a minute that it was Comstock Rogers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
You'll just have to ask me what you want me to tell you.
Okay. How did your mom meet your father?
My father came through here. He was from Kansas and worked for my grandfather somewhere or something like that. And they met. That's the way my father got.
So they had a nice courtship, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm a romantic at heart. I always have to learn about the courtships. So this was the lady who married Mr. Rogers, then jumping back to this, would have been your aunt by your father's second marriage.
My mother's half-sister.
I see. How did the Rogers come to be involved with you Comstocks?
Well,
how did he get back here from Honolulu?
See, she was, her name was Anna Kennicott. And of course she inherited her share in the ranch when my grandfather died.
Uh-huh.
And prior to that, she'd married Ed Rogers. And I started running part of the ranch. And after my grandfather had died, and Rogers, he went in with me. He put up some money against my time and what stock and equipment I had. We just went partners running the ranch. He rented the other people's share of the ranch, and that's my brother. And well, it was my mother at that time. Still, she was still alive,
mm-hmm.
And the sisters, Anna Rogers and her sister. So that's how he got into it, and that's about all there really is to it. We've been in the ranching business ever since.
Through a lot of ups and downs.
He died. I think it was 1964, and two of his daughters inherited his share, and we kept the partnership partners with them now.
I see, and they're both still alive.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He must have been fairly elderly when he died. Wasn't he?
Fairly what?
Elderly.
Oh, he was, I think, 73, something like
that. Oh, not all that old then, really. Compared to some people I've met.
Yeah.
Now, was your father actively involved in the ranch after he and your mother married?
No, when my mother and father got married, they went over to Shoshone, which is over above Glenwood Springs.
Oh, now I know.
He had a timber claim over there. And my brother, Walter, 2 years older than me, he was born there. But then my father got TB. And he went down to New Mexico, down near Silver City, and took up a homestead down there. At that time, that climate was considered the best in the country for tuberculosis.
I'd heard that. It was
and he went down there on that account. He went down there. My mother went to some of her uncles, my grandfather's brothers, that settled at Delta, near Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born there, 1905. And quick as I was big enough to move away, my mother and brother and I went down on the train to Mesa, Arizona, which was the closest place that the railroad went to
Silver City.
Where he homesteaded over by Silver City, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. He met us there with a covered wagon. We went across there. But he never got over the TB. He died down there, but I guess it must have been around 1912 or something like that.
And oh my goodness.
My mother sold the place out and came back to the home ranch here.
So you were just barely old enough to remember him, weren't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was the trip by train and then by covered wagon to Silver City when you were just a tiny baby, or were you old enough to remember it?
Yeah, I've often wished I could remember that trip.
It must have been a fun trip for kids.
Because a good deal of it was, of course, the Navajo Reservation, this covered wagon trip.
Do you remember your mother saying anything about being nervous crossing the reservation? The Navajos hadn't been on the reservation all that long at that time, had they?
Well, I don't know how long they'd been there, but they weren't in any trouble. They were peaceable.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I guess we still got a couple of old Navajo blankets or something that they traded off the Indians.
Oh, my goodness, and those things are worth thousands of dollars today.
Yeah, I don't know. Possibly they might if we get them cleaned up, if they aren't too badly moth-eaten. But that's the only thing I can remember my mother saying about us. That's where I learned to crawl, creep, see. When they started to cross there, I don't know how long it took them, but quite a while to make the trip. You didn't make very far with a team and a wagon out there.
No, I heard you didn't.
But they'd pick a place to camp for overnight. She'd get out and lay down a blanket and put the baby, that was me, on it, and then go ahead and make it camp. But before they got across there, she had a watch printer trying to crawl off of the blanket and start out through the cactus and soapweeds and so on all fours. So I don't know if that much worth very much for your history.
Well, it is to me. Not very many people learn to crawl in the cactus and the sagebrush. I bet those were fun memories for your mother after the trip was over with. I'm sure that it wasn't easy for her at the time. Do I understand that your father went to Mesa to get her and then...
Yeah, he came over to Mesa, Arizona.
So she wasn't traveling by herself then with
you? No, well, we were on the train from here to Mesa, and then from... He met us there and we went across.
I see. Did she say anything about the train trip?
No. I don't remember anything about that.
Of course, I suppose traveling by train was commonplace by that time.
Oh, yeah. It
must not have been very eventful. I don't know if many of us today, used to our fast forms of transportation, would hold our patience on that kind of a train trip, though.
Well, maybe not. Of course, I traveled on the train quite a little, not any long trips, but in my lifetime. Used to be a train in here, you know.
Yes, I knew there did.
And that was the slowest thing in the world. You got on the train here and got as far as Texas Creek, and then you usually had to wait 3 or 4 hours before another train would come along.
Man, you could barely walk to Texas Creek.
If you wanted
Texas
to go
Creek,
to Denver or anywhere. Right?
Sure.
Of course, there was a means of getting away from here. Nowadays, you got to have your own transportation.
Yeah. And in this gas crunch, some of us don't go as far as we'd like to, do we?
No. Getting tough for that.
Oh. How old were you when you took over running the ranch, or part of it?
Well, of course, when we came here after my father died down there, came back up here on 1912, 13,
mm-hmm.
and I was just a little kid. But I was out with the men on the, that were running the ranch, you know, out there in the way mostly, you know, but all the time.
But although they didn't mind
but
it.
I finally went to school at through the what they called the Agriculture College, Fort Collins. Those days now part of the state university. You know. And I finished here in 1929.
I see.
And come home and started running about half the ranch. And it was rented out, and the renters kept running the other half till 1936 was when I went to partnership with Rogers and run the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he bought some more land up toward the mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
Which we used to call the Hog Ranch. It was
the Hog Ranch, H-O-G.
H-O-G, Hog Ranch.
Uh-huh.
A man named Shepherd started it. He was from Denver. He got it to get in. They're going to raise hogs up there. And that's
on the mountain?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Just below the timber.
I wasn't aware that hogs stood altitude very well.
Well, they never got anywhere. Really. That's where the place got the name and stuff to it.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's pretty good pasture land for cattle.
Is it?
Yeah.
I realized that the way I was raised, too, asking what a man's acreage is kind of like asking what his income is, but for these people who weren't raised the way we were, could you tell me approximately how much land your ranch encompasses?
It was between 4,000 and 5,000 acres.
That was a fairly large holding for this area, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the most of it is just grazing land, you know.
Yeah.
That's all we tried. If you know anything about the valley, it went through the stages of trying to raise vegetables and
mm-hmm.
Peas and lettuce and potatoes, and we've kind of experimented that a little bit. All we ever did that really did any good was raise cattle.
If you can do one thing well, that's all you need, isn't it?
That's all the country's good for.
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to make it a recreation area and chop it up into
your land is encompassed by rare too, isn't it?
Hmm?
Was your land in on the rare too thing with the national forest?
No, we're not on the forest. Well, we do join the forest,
mm-hmm.
but the whole country, you know, is getting settled up with,
yeah.
Chopped up into little small places, and it won't be good for anything when they get through that.
No, lots of small one cow outfits maybe, and that's about it, huh?
Well, no, people just want a place to come for somewhere they think maybe they'd like to retire here, you know.
Yeah. I want to ask you about going to college. Most of the people that I have talked with who were raised here in the valley, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of them who went much farther than the eighth grade to school. Some did go to high school for a couple of maybe 3 years.
Uh-huh.
You seem very fortunate to have gone, to have been able to go to college.
Oh, I suppose it was, yes.
Was it something that you really, really wanted to do, or was it just something that was accepted that you would do?
Well, I wanted to, of course, mm-hmm. and it wasn't too easy. My mother and the family, we didn't have too much money. I had to work
tuition
what I worked for.
Tuition was high even then, wasn't it?
But I'd do it over again, I guess, same way.
Oh, that's super. Did your brother Walter go also?
He went through high school and went 1 year to college.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided he didn't want any more college. When we got ready to go to high school, finished grade school here, there wasn't any high school here.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, my grandmother owned a house down in Canyon, in South Canyon. We went down there and went to high school. About, I guess, second year or so after we started there, they got the high school started here. But we went ahead and finished down there as long as we started there.
How do you think, of course this may be an unfair question, but how do you think the education you were able to get in Canyon compared with what the kids were able to get up here who were going to high school up here after it started?
Well, that's a little hard to say. Not had just gone there and not gone here, and
sure.
I haven't had any kids to go here or anything. But I doubt if there's very much difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking to Hattie Berry the other day, and of course, you know, she's taught for years and years and years. And I was telling her about old things I'd read about the movement kind of, they call it back to the roots, you know, there are people, especially in the East and Midwest, who want to send their kids back to one-room schools where, I think, mostly what they're pointing toward is individual help and the small school atmosphere where you knew everybody, rather than the big consolidated schools where the kids kind of get lost in the shuffle. And Mrs. Berry said, I would never like to see that happen. She felt that the quality of education would deteriorate so far because the amount of classes couldn't be offered, the variety wouldn't be there, you know. I thought that was a very interesting thought.
Of course, I went to grade school, just a little one-room school.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to ULA, to grade school?
ULA. I believe that was better than the way the schools are now. Teachers, of course, we didn't have just a few kids going to the school, but the teacher could put in more time with each kid and get to know them, you know, and if they needed a little extra help of some kind, well, they'd help. Where now they go in and they're exposed to it, you might say, and if it don't take, why, that's what happened.
I'm inclined to agree with you. Of course, I you know, my schooling was a little bit different simply because the age in which I was born, but I did have a little bit of experience with a small school.
Uh-huh.
We had two grades to a classroom, and also a high school where we had 1,600 people.
Yeah.
You know, and a little bit of in between. And I'm kind of like you. When faced with 1,599 classmates, I was about ready to go back to the one-room school. Plus the fact that I think, too, and I know when I was going to high school especially, part of the reason I went and enjoyed school was because of the social activities. When you were going to school, you didn't have that many social activities, did you?
Not nearly so much.
I mean, not directly connected with the school.
A little athletics in high school, mm-hmm. but nothing like nowadays.
Did you participate in sports in high school?
Oh, I tried to, some, and football. But never was very good at it.
Not quite a Newt Rockney, huh?
No. Yeah. I was a skinny little country kid, you know. He just kind of run over me.
How is it that the city kids are always bigger and heavier and meaner than the country kids?
I don't know.
It seems like it's always been that way, doesn't it? Were you treated any differently because you were from the country when you went to high school than you would have been from the city?
No, I don't think so. There wasn't any difference in it.
Mm-hmm. I talked to some people who said that they really did feel the difference. Many of them were women who had boarded with people. And, of course, I suppose if word ever got out that you were boarding to go to high school, then perhaps your classmates didn't receive you quite as well. I don't know. Kids can be awfully cruel. Jay, I was going to ask you a terribly important question. You just left. I know what it was. What do you remember most about college?
What do I remember most? I don't believe there's any one thing much more than others.
What did you think of the quality of your professors? Did you feel like they knew things that were going to help you when you came back home to run your ranch?
Oh, yes. Yes, they did.
It would seem perhaps that the quality has deteriorated over the years. I definitely felt that some of them didn't know anything that was going to help me when I left.
Well, an awful lot of difference in the different professors, for that matter.
I can imagine.
We had some of them that I didn't think knew anything. You know?
Yeah.
Or if they did, they couldn't teach it. But then the others were, some of them were real good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about, what did you do for fun when you went to college? Did you rope calves or were you active in rodeo club or livestock club or anything?
Oh, we didn't do very much of anything for fun. Of course, I belonged to the livestock club. And I didn't join any fraternity, any
mm-hmm.
social fraternity. But we just did pretty busy with the schoolwork, studying. And weekends we go to show or just whatever might happen to do.
I'm not asking you if you drink, but was Fort Collins dry at that time, or did they change the ruling on that later? Of course, part of that...
It was still prohibition time.
I was just going to say,
whole state.
Didn't really make any difference, did it?
there was moonshine, mm-hmm. liquor around. But there wasn't very much drinking amongst the students.
Most of them were there to go
much.
To school, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, now, I haven't been back there... As I said, I graduated in 1929. I went back homecoming day, the first two homecomings. I've never been back there since. And, of course, at that time, there was 1,400 students.
Mm-hmm.
Now, geez, I don't know, 25,000 or something like that.
1,800, 1,805, I think.
Yeah, way. But,
yeah.
And they, all the school grounds and the college farm and everything is, from what people have told me, are so much bigger and all. I wouldn't know the place. Where'd you go to school?
In Fort Collins. Yeah.
Is that where you met Keith?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
He was just leaving and I was just arriving. We almost missed each other.
Oh. Where did you come from before you went to...
Well, I... Oh, do you remember what it was called? Hmm? Do you remember what the woman's building was called?
Oh, Ammons Hall, I think.
My mother stayed in Ammons when she went there. Yeah. I just heard recently they had a fire at Ammons, but most of it is still... used as office buildings. Several of her classes were in Guggenheim Hall.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I think it would have been there. Either that or they were just building it about the time you were there.
Yeah.
And I don't know when the Vet Science building went up. The old Vet Science building is on the Oval. And I think some classes are still taught, and I know I had 3 classes in the Vet Science building. But you know, they've just built the brand new vet hospital.
Yeah.
And it's way out on the other side of town. How often did you get to go home when you were in college? Just for the summers?
Just for Christmas vacation and spring vacation.
And did you take the train to and from Fort Collins?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, usually a time or two I come home with some. One time I come back to as far as Canyon City with the boy that was from there. It had no water D Ford, you know, and
gosh. I bet the trip took almost longer than the train trip, didn't it?
Yeah, it took so long. It didn't
cost what a fun trip.
One trip, I don't care what that was. It was about 20 below zero when we left Fort Collins in the morning. I had a heck of a time getting that old Ford started, you know.
He had two
more fellows that lived at Cripple Creek. And we come to Colorado Springs, took them up Cripple Creek, and come down the canyon, down Phantom Canyon Road there, middle of night. Way below zero.
I've heard that that's not a road that a lot of people like to drive in the middle of the night.
No, it wouldn't be too good. Of course, kids that age, you know, they'll try about anything.
Didn't we all? I bet it was a fun trip, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did the car you were in have a heater?
Pardon?
Did the car you were in have a heater?
No, it didn't even have a top on.
Oh, my.
I rode in the front seat with the guy that owned the thing, and it wasn't too bad there with the windshield, but these boys in the back seat, they had to cover up with blankets.
The wind came down and got them right in the back seat, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, gracious. Was that for what, Christmas break?
That was Christmas vacation, yeah.
Have the cattle you've raised been mostly commercial cattle, or have they been registered as well?
It was just commercial cattle, yeah. Herefords, polar Herefords.
Did you ever exhibit any feeder calves or anything at stock show?
No, I never took anything there.
I wonder how
we had good cattle, but not fancy enough to go to stock show.
Some of them we saw this year, I wish people had taken that advice to heart. did you go any time at all just to see what was there?
Stock show? Uh-huh. Oh yeah, I've gone to stock show. Put in there every year for a long time.
I thought you had. You said you spent quite a while there this year.
Yeah.
It's changed a bit, hasn't it?
Oh yes, boy, it's changing all the time.
We were able to get Willard Sims' book, 10 Days in January. Did you happen to see a copy of it?
No, I didn't.
Well, you know, I can't remember his title right now, but anyway, he kind of runs the show.
Oh.
There. I'll bring his book by sometime. I think you might enjoy reading it. I think kind of his memoirs, more or less.
I saw something about it. Well, I don't know. Has he finished it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that he finished it and got it published just in time to be distributed at Stock Show.
Well, I didn't see anything of it.
Yeah. I haven't read it cover to cover yet, but I've leafed through it, and it looks really interesting. It looks fun to read. I'm sure there are a lot of things he talks about in there you will have seen and will remember.
Yeah.
Seeing in the book.
I remember the guy before Sims. I can't think of his name right now.
Well, one of them was Charlie Kirkle. One of them was Charlie Kirk. Do you remember him?
No, this was a different one.
Charlie retired. Oh, gosh. Must have been 5 years ago, and he is quite elderly.
Oh.
He's only about as tall as I am. Probably doesn't weigh as much.
Oh.
He and his son had taken over part of his work there at Stock Show when he did. You know, this isn't on the subject at all, but I've always wondered, do you know where this picture was taken that is right here in front of us? Of the cattle in the meadow?
No, I can't see.
I don't know the mountains well enough to figure out which mountains those are.
Especially it's just
well, anyway. I won't take up a whole lot more of your time. Kind of interested in things that you remember having changed here in the valley concerning cattle ranching.
How things changed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I first came here, it was just the last days, you might say, of the open range.
Mm-hmm.
About where we live, our place from there on north to the Arkansas River was all open country. And people just run cattle out there.
So you actually held roundups in the fall and so on, didn't you?
Just a couple in my time. Of course, they threw that country open to homestead, which it should never have been, but they did, you know. And the dry farmers, people who thought they could come in and dry farm there because they dry farm somewhere else and it would work, you know, they got enough rain, enough mm-hmm. moisture. So they came in and took up practically all the country and fenced it up and plowed up the draws and the best parts of the grass to try to raise grain or something in. And they starved. They all starved out. Of course, they couldn't make it over. And so then it was different people kept putting together a little more and more of it to get big enough spread to run some cattle on. So that was quite a change through that when that all took place. You know, the homesteading it and then going back into just grazing land again. And then I tried raising the head lettuce and telephone peas and so on. They had the railroad was still in here. They had what they called vegetable sheds, a couple here, and one down on the hillside where they loaded these vegetables into refrigerator cars. And there was a cook outfit. They put up a lot of ice here in the country and iced those cars. Mm-hmm. And then the railroad quit and went out. And so that just about finished the vegetable business.
Mm-hmm. What did those people do when they could no longer sell their vegetables?
Well, and they went through a stage when everybody was milking cows here. And everybody had a little bunch of beef-type mm-hmm. cattle, and then they had a bunch of milk cows, and they milked cows and sold cream, living out of a cream can pretty much. And then it kind of, some of the biggest ones of them kind of got into the business of milking and dairying in a pretty big way, and
There was milk trucks hauled, come in, haul the milk out to Colorado Springs and places.
Oh, I see. The dairy building that's here in town, on the west side of town, came into being?
Yeah, that was Bachelor's Dairy, they called it. They bought milk and made ice cream and so on. But more of the milk was shipped out.
Mm-hmm.
But then there got to be so much government interference, inspectors coming in and inspecting these dairy barns, mm-hmm. and making them keep making more improvements on them. Everybody got disgusted. Quit that, and it's just kind of drifted back into cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's what it is now, cattle and hay.
Yeah. We were talking about when the land was open range. You came back in, what, 1912?
Yeah, 12, 13.
You would have been about 7 years old.
Yeah.
What do you remember? I guess maybe what sticks in your memory as a little boy when the country was open range?
Well, nothing much.
Did you get to go out with the men?
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
How many men did your grandfather employ at that time?
Just got the job.
Well, at the time we come back, at mm-hmm. that time, he had. You might say retired. He was renting the ranch out to renters.
Oh, I see. I misunderstood that before.
Before he rented it out, why, of course, when he was first ranching, first putting up hay, so they did it all by hand, you see, and he'd have 12, 15 men during the haying season, so on. That is, they had to, they just had to load this hay on wagons and haul it in, stack it by hand. But by the time we got back here, and they were renting it out, and they were using, well, everything was done with horses.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any tractors. But they did have the buck rakes and stackers to, derricks to put the hay mm-hmm. on the stack.
And all hay was stacked loose at that time. You didn't have stationary balers.
The hay was all stacked loose, mm-hmm. and hay that they sold, there was quite a lot of hay sold, but they baled it out of the stack during the winter.
See,
stationary baler pulled it up beside the stack.
I see. Just a minute, I'm going to turn this.